We do believe something occurred on that date, the words of embattled Sheriff Chris Nanos in Pima County. But then he says, we cannot confirm that the image was from January 11th. So which is it? All this is there's a push to put up some new billboards, and the woman at the center of that joined Surviving Survivor right now. All this as the family pleads that someone knows something. The timeline and the disappearance of Nancy Guthrie is not getting any clearer. It's just getting a whole lot more confusing. If you're confused by all this, don't worry. You should be.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. Tonight, the very latest in the Nancy Guthrie case. We're now seeing a new effort to put some new types of billboards up around the greater Tucson area and beyond. And the woman who is behind that is going to join us. And you know her. She's a friend of mine, and she's a baddie, as my daughters would say. But I'll make you hang on for one split second before we introduce her. Meanwhile, there was a board of supervisors meeting last night, putting pressure on leadership, meaning Sheriff Chris Nanos. And one of the people who got up to speak is a best guest, Sergeant Aaron Cross, and a friend of another guest on the show tonight. Confusion over the timeline of the crime itself, and investigators now focusing, despite that confusion, on days and even weeks before the abduction. So here to break this all down, the godfather of true crime, the voice of reason, Phil Ramos, three-time Officer of the Year in Las Vegas. Guy was hunting down the Cuban mob. He's been shot at. He was at Tupac's autopsy. He was a homicide detective for over 15 years. Why is there no show about you, Phil Ramos? That's going to all change thanks to Surviving the Survivor. Next up, this is the woman trying to get some billboards put up, all in good faith. She cares. This woman cares about victims. She is retired FBI. She's not just any woman, retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendoffer, and last but certainly not least to the stage. And we joked yesterday, we'll see you next week. And I said, what are you talking about? I'll probably see you tomorrow night. And I was right. Lieutenant Bob Krieger, retired Pima County SWAT commander. The man can kill you like Coffendoffer can, and probably Phil Ramos too, in a fraction of a second. So be careful what you say. So, Jen, I reached out this morning because I saw a tweet you put out about these billboards that you had this great idea. So without me butchering it, tell people what your idea was and sort of the path that you were taking here.
Well, you know, it was something that I've been talking about forever. And it just initially when the billboards went up, it was earlier in the investigation, and it made a lot of sense because it was before the 10th day when the FBI and law enforcement had the picture of who I call Porch Guy, the possible perpetrator. Well, he's the perpetrator, but are there others? We don't know. Nevertheless, you have this great picture of this guy, even though he's masked. There's a lot of particular details you can make out about him. Certainly his body, his face, his eyebrows, the mustache, and so on. And I thought, why in the world are we not having this on a billboard? Why isn't it in Spanish? Because very likely this man could be of Spanish heritage. And then third, why aren't we listing the $1.2 million that is all there for the taking for anybody who might recognize this guy? And other than true crimers, people who watch news, mainstream media, you are not going to necessarily even have any idea that Porch Guy exists. But if you put billboards in and around that Tucson area and then change the picture out of the posters that we put up so long ago, more at the beginning of the investigation, the time is now to get his face out there and hopefully somebody might recognize him. So that was the whole idea that I've kind of been working on now probably for 2 weeks.
Yeah, so I applaud you because I think it's a fantastic idea. And spoiler alert, Chris Nanos does not think it's a fantastic idea. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But Phil Ramos, if you're working what you believe to be a homicide and you said openly you don't think Nancy Guthrie sadly is with us anymore, let's hope that she is and that it's a miracle. But wouldn't you want to get, you know, Jennifer calls him porch man, I call him nest camera guy, pick your adjectives, but do you think it's a good idea to get this image out there on a billboard? You know, Nancy Guthrie has been up there, but this is the guy accused of the crime. What do you think of the idea before we get to, I guess, a little bit of controversy about it?
Oh, I think it's a great idea. Great idea, Jennifer. And it's just spot on. You need to reach so many people because there's that one person that knows something that they don't realize that they know, and it might click with them, and they might say, hey, you know what? I think I will call the cops about whatever it was that I saw, and I didn't think it was a big deal. Well, kudos to you. It's a great, great idea.
Yeah. Before I get to Bob, just back to Jen. So, Jen, I know that you went from higher up. You're retired FBI, and you went to some people that ran offices out west. Just can you fill us in a little bit about just the steps? You know, this wasn't like a rogue move. I'm Jennifer Coffendoffer. I'm just going to go ahead and do this. You went after permission and essentially got permission, correct?
That's exactly right. If I were the case agent on this case, the last thing I would want, as you said, rogue, I wouldn't want some rogue FBI retired agent doing this without permission of the FBI. So, of course, the first step I took was to contact somebody who had a very close relationship with individuals in the FBI that could give that permission. So that's what I did. And last night, I got the word back. It was a beautiful text. I was so excited this morning. And it said, yes, go ahead. You can use the tip line number. The family had actually mentioned something about this previously. You have the thumbs up and the go ahead. And I got on my show this morning and I was so excited. In fact, the name of the podcast, it says great news about Nancy, because to me, getting this face and this imagery out there, nobody saw Nancy after she was abducted likely, but people might know this guy. And so anyway, that was my reasoning behind it, and I was really excited. So I got the check mark from the Bureau, but I just found out right before going on the show from you, I didn't get a check mark from Nanos. And it's so interesting. So the Bureau has up several billboards. I talked to the billboard company, the vice president. She was amazing. She said, oh my gosh, I love this idea. We absolutely support it. I can actually change out all the billboards that are already put up and being financed or in their relationship with the FBI. I can change those out from the old ones. Do you have that old billboard by chance?
COE will get it up. I don't, but she's as fast on the graphics as Bob Krieger is on the holster. Bob Krieger, to you. So Jen didn't even know this, and we break news here on STS. So let me bring this up and read it to our audience and get your reaction, which is this. This just went out within the last 40 minutes or so from Chris Nanos and the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Please be advised there is no official GoFundMe or any fundraising effort associated with the Guthrie investigation. Billboard displays are funded through official channels. Any claims suggesting otherwise are fraudulent and will be investigated accordingly. The public is urged to remain vigilant and not send money to anyone claiming to raise funds related to this case. Anyone with information that may assist investigators is asked to call 1-800, call FBI or 888-CRIME. Bob, I'll leave it up. And obviously, Jen, I'll let you respond to this. But, this was still in the, getting to work stages. Jen wanted to start a GoFundMe. This is the old billboard, Jen. But Bob, to you first, your reaction to this swift response from Chris Nanos basically telling the FBI once again to get lost.
I want to take it in a different way because this actually popped up on my timeline. And I wasn't aware that this is what you were talking about, Joel. Mm-hmm. I took this message from the Sheriff's Department as more of a notice to the public specific to the GoFundMe stuff. specific to scammers attempting to jump on Nancy's story and fundraise in a manner which, you know, would be absolutely inappropriate. If this has anything to do specific with the billboards that Jennifer is talking about to put up to get the information out there to get tips, that would be very disappointing. Because like Phil said, it is vital to the investigation. It's what the investigators need. I'll take it one step further from what Jennifer said. She said she thinks someone might know who this person is. No, someone knows who this dude is. Between his gait, his stance, the clothes, all of those things. And the more people that can see it, the more options they have to see it, to recall something from days or weeks or even months ago, that is going to do nothing but help the investigation. I hope I'm right in saying that this message put out by the Sheriff's Department is specific to GoFundMe and to scammers. And if they / Sheriff Nanos was to put a nix on the billboard idea, that would be incredibly disappointing. Because if the FBI is already on board, he continues to say they're working in lockstep, hand in hand, which we knew at the beginning wasn't exactly true. He has a history of not working well with others. But that all being said, this should be happening. This should absolutely be happening. The pictures should be up. They should be more out there in everybody's face. We need something. The investigators need something to continue moving on with. Not that they don't have other tips to follow up on, but that's how I took this message, because I did see it before we popped on. So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and I mean, that's very well taken here, and you very well might be right. Now, I was, you know, talking to Jen and noticed this pop up. So I just, you know, the way my brain connected, because he literally uses the billboard in the second paragraph. So, and Gia and TJ's mom weighing in here, to me, he's targeting the billboards in this message. Why wouldn't he want the help? Jen, do you read it? Bob read it more like, you know, just scammers and GoFundMe people, but he's specifically talking about a billboard in the second paragraph. So how are you taking this, Jen?
Oh, when you sent this to me, my jaw dropped because I just really thought this was such a good idea. I will say, and I sent out a tweet tonight before I went on and before I saw this, just to give an update to everybody, because people have been blowing up my DMs asking about where we're at. Essentially, the Bureau said they do not want to change the billboards that exist, and the money that would be needed to put up one. So my idea, because this seems so centered on Tucson, is to have one on the East Corridor, the West Corridor, and two going south toward Mexico, but fairly close proximity to Tucson. That was the whole idea of this, and that if for some reason assets were tied up with the Bureau and those agreements, you know, that's fine. But this is something that personally for me and for advocacy and for just doing the damn right thing, this made so much sense to me. So, Joel, that's why this morning I was so excited. And I told everybody, if there's no GoFundMe set up yet, but I said, if we end up doing this, let me get the numbers from the billboard company. So I called them and they said they'll put something together. It's 2 to 3 weeks to even be able to put something up, because you can't use electronic billboards in this area, which I never knew.
Well, so, why is that? Do we know why? Why can't you use electric?
It's an ordinance.
Oh,
it's
wow. Ordinance. Oh, they have a light pollution issue. Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't.
There are almost no billboards in Tucson. It's been an ordinance. It's always been here. It's the weird. It's nice for driving. You're not inundated with stuff. But yeah, it is there, and it's been there for a while.
Bob Krieger, you drive down Speedway. It's like Billboard Alley.
It's all geared towards the interstate. Everything off the interstate. It's difficult to get things up there.
Wow. So, I mean, Jen, your idea once again was to put them where? I think you said 4 or 5. Is that right?
Well, my thought was, and I would love to get feedback from these gentlemen, but my thought was east and west, because remember, the other billboards are in California and in Texas. So I believe that, you know, they must have some belief that could have a nexus there. And then south to Mexico, because really, I will be surprised if this person doesn't end up being Hispanic from how he looks, from the fact that all of these billboards where they were placed was a high concentration of Hispanic people. And that's why I think it should be in Spanish too. You're closing out a huge majority of these populations by not letting them even be able to read what's happening.
Guess what, STS Nation? I'm actually feeling sort of calm today. But whenever I feel calm, it makes me incredibly tense and uncomfortable because I'm used to living with high anxiety. But luckily for you and for me now, I have found an amazing company that ships federally legal THC right to your front door. And I'm talking about Mood.com. And the reason I'm feeling so chilled out is because of Chill Out Gummies. They just calm you. And I can't explain why. And then, you know, I've got a little bit of ADHD, and when my mind is all over the place, well, I turn to Mind Magic Gummies that really help me with my focus. And then when it is time to call it a day and my mind is still running, it is Sleepy Time Gummies that help knock me out within 15 minutes, which is 14 minutes longer than it takes Fred Ethel and the COE to fall asleep. But if gummies aren't your thing, don't worry. There's flour, there are pre-rolls, there are bakery treats, and even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
Yeah, and listen, some people are going to get offended by a Latino or Hispanic male. That's what Jen thinks. Could it be otherwise? 100%. Possible. But Phil Ramos, just the idea of putting these billboards, and you see one here that's electric, and you just heard Bob Krieger say it's next to impossible to get them up on the interstate, but you can get them, you know, kind of leaving town. Is that the right way to do it? Jen wanted your feedback, east, west, and heading south, putting a couple on the route to Mexico, which is only about 60 miles south of Tucson.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, you want to flood that area, especially on the main arteries, where people are coming and going, coming and going all the time. If you can put them, double them up where they are, you know, I don't know why you would have an ordinance banning electronic billboard advertising like that. But you know, it is what it is. That's the way they have it. So you work around that and you make the best out of that situation. So the more you can flood her image and the phone number and the brief little circumstances, the more people it's going to reach. You know, there may be somebody that just only drives this way once a month or something for work. It just, whatever the circumstances are, just flood the area with that imagery.
Yeah. And Jen, do you have a sense of the Guthrie family's feelings about this? Had you heard anything? I don't know that you talked to them, but any sense of their thoughts on this? And someone pointed out, by the way, that in all the Guthrie family statements, they kind of they don't directly ever thank the sheriff. They sort of do it in a roundabout way. They're not very effusive about their adoration for Sheriff Chris Nanos. But do you know about the family's take on any of this?
So what was relayed to me is that they very much support the billboard campaign. That was relayed to me specifically. I have the exact words written out in a text message. However, it was terrible when I put this up. People actually were attacking the Guthries. And I think that caused the Guthries perhaps to reach out because, I mean, I feel terrible. The GoFundMe idea was my idea. If FBI funds were tied up to do this initiative, right? And so the Guthries never knew about a GoFundMe. I just said that because there's got to be some way to fund this if, again, the FBI funds were tied up with the other billboards they had up and they weren't interested in paying. So they're interested in supporting, but they're not interested in paying. And that's where we're at. And I just found that out tonight.
And what were they? I mean, what? First of all, who's going to attack the Guthries? But what were they attacking them about?
They were just saying, GoFundMe when the Guthries are millionaires and everything. It was just so ugly. You know, this is something that the true crime community, advocates, people who want to see this beast arrested and want to find out what happened to Nancy and hopefully maybe she'll be alive. that's what this effort is about. And people just get sidetracked with other things, I think.
I mean, Bob, you're a voice of reason, like Phil Ramos. I mean, are there around, are there ways around this? Someone said match billboards with flyers. I mean, should flyers have been handed out around the community and maybe in peripheral areas? You know, we once talked about 3 points, which is sort of the deliverance of Tucson, if you've ever seen the movie. But what about other like workarounds besides just a billboard? Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, between social media and just, you know, things that are happening in the community, there's plenty of workarounds. You can't get that picture out there enough. Between I-10 going, you know, north and west of Phoenix and L.A. and going east into New Mexico and Texas, and then I-19 going south to the border, there are billboards. It's not like it's completely devoid of them. So there are ways of getting them up there, but definitely not the electronic ones like you see in most metropolitan areas. But it's just another tool that has to be done. There are just so many good reasons why it should be done. And I think everyone, at least on the panel, agrees with that, probably in the chat as well.
Yeah, Phil Ramos, this is a good question. What gets more attention, a billboard or being on television? I know you worked a lot of cases, and I think there's a new iteration of America's Most Wanted, but what in your opinion would grab the most attention? I mean, I guess social media today is the place to be, right? I mean, I saw Jen's tweet on X, obviously.
Yeah, it all depends on what the demographics are on who you're trying to reach out to. In this case, it's everybody that can read and write the English language. So I don't know that there's a big difference between a billboard and television advertising, newspaper ads, full page newspaper ads, you know, local magazine ads, wherever you can get your image and the reward amount and the circumstances, just keep pouring money into that situation. I don't think that money is an issue here. Like Jen said earlier, we're talking about people that are well off and have the funds available immediately to be able to do this. So it's, you're looking at the 9-to-5 crowd that drives in and goes home for the billboards. And then you're looking at people that stay at home and have a cup of coffee in the morning and reading the paper. And conversely, people that just go shopping and look at the little plastered 8x10 notices on the store windows and stuff like that. It's so all encompassing, and there's so many mediums available to get this information out that I don't think you could overdo it. Just keep plugging away at it.
And Phil, just coupled with that, if I came to you on day 3 and I said, "Hey, Phil Ramos, I'm going to ask you why this case isn't solved on day 52. We're at day 52. Did you think we would get here? And how do you keep moving forward?" I asked Bob Krieger and Kurt Dabb. By the way, someone said, do you think more than one individual is involved? And on the show last night, Kurt Dabb had an interesting take. The COE is loading that up along with a board of supervisors meeting that was pretty important last night. I'm going to play that for you in a second. But you see, here are some flyers that are in mailboxes. But Phil Ramos, day 52, how did we end up here?
Oh, man, that is a good question, isn't it? Yeah, we were talking about this day 1, 2, and 3. How long is it going to take? How long is it going to take? And I think all of us who had any experience that, it shouldn't take more than a couple of weeks to get this figured out. And here we are now several weeks later, and everybody's scratching their head, myself included. I mean, what more could they be doing that we're not aware of? And what else is there that came from the house that you've got to have that direct physical evidence? You can't be chasing ghosts. You have to go after what is going to be beneficial to you if and when you make an arrest and you get in front of a jury. You've got to work on that. So not knowing what they have to work with makes it a little bit difficult for us to opine intelligently on what the next step would be or why it's been taking so long. So we're at a disadvantage there, but that's the way it is. That's just the way it is on major cases like this.
Yeah. By the way, Dawn Logan, just to date myself here, used to have missing people on milk cartons. I think the very first was Eitan Pates in New York City, yeah. Who's still never been found, and they are finally arrested someone. But I remember being scared as hell as a little kid asking my mom, why is there a picture of a little kid on a milk carton? And I hope my face never ends up in a milk carton. And I don't think it ever did. Thank God. But it was scary as a little kid. New York City was a scary place, man. In the 1970s, to go in, it was all graffiti and streetwalkers and squeegee people. Scary. My daughter says the same thing today. I took her through Times Square. She was like, get me out of here. Bob Krieger, someone in the comments section said just quite simply, Pima County needs a fresh eye, fresh set of eyes on this. What are your thoughts? Do they need, like in soccer, you know, there's always substitutions, right? People coming in. Do you need to substitute some investigators in and out to get a fresh set of eyes on this?
Well, there are plenty of good eyes on it. It needs a refreshing of something, but I don't think it's the investigators. The men and women that are doing it, they're doing a great job. They've got the FBI eyes. They've got, you know, all of our eyes, all the folks who are constantly giving in tips. There are plenty of eyes on it. They are going to be the ones who are investigating it now are going to be the ones who ultimately solve it, however it gets solved, when it gets solved. You know, but it doesn't hurt, you know, just the investigators who aren't attached to the task force right now might see or hear something one day. And, you know, so there's exponentially, you know, just within the Sheriff's Department agency, there's 900 eyes on it. So you've got tons of eyes. You've got Tucson Police Department. You've got Oro Valley, Marana, all Sarita, all the local agencies as well, who are very aware of it. And if they get any information, so the number of eyes isn't probably the biggest issue. It's going back to what those eyes are getting, you know, the information. And that's why asking the community in English and in Spanish, hey, what do you know? What can you help us with? That's the important thing. And that's what it should be focused on.
Five memberships here from Cammy Day. Thank you to Cammy Day, a longtime STSer. Appreciate it. Someone's asking, can they put the porch guy on the billboards? That's exactly what Jen Koffendoffer was trying to do until she got a statement for that. Bob's reading it one way. I'm reading it a different way. But basically, looks like Pima County might have an issue with that. Shout out to AR Wyoming. COE, I know you're trying to get the council meeting up. When you do, just give me the heads up and we'll play it. Now, the Board of Supervisors meeting from last night. But Jen, to you, same question as I asked the other two. Day 52. I mean, did you ever have cases? I know you were in Houston a long time, but you ever have cases where you kind of quietly said to each other, oh, we're going to figure this out. This is going to, you know, this we're going to figure this out relatively quickly, you know, equivalent to sort of a slam dunk case. And then you're 52 days in going, what's going on here?
Not 52 days in. 52 days in is a long time, but in some regards, in a case like this, I would say it's kind of a short time only because there is so much that they don't have. This guy, he looks like a bumbling idiot, but he went in the dark of the night in a neighborhood where there's absolutely no lighting. He apparently protected his DNA enough where still we have DNA answers. He covered his face enough that we still don't have anybody that's come forward, because I completely agree with the panel. Somebody knows him. If you are his dad, his mom, his sister, his girlfriend, you know exactly who those eyes belong to. And that's why I think it's just so important to get it out there, because what are the chances that somebody who knows him doesn't even know about this? The pizza guy who delivers pizza all throughout Pima County, he went to the front door of Nancy Guthrie's house, and when they asked him, do you know where you're at? He said, no, I have no idea. What's going on here?
Yeah. Which is crazy, but
crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta tell you, we've been covering the Dan Markell murder here since we started in true crime like 3 years ago. And I've been up to Tallahassee, a huge murder trial with five different, defendants that have already been tried. And when I go up to Tallahassee and ask people, almost no one has heard of the case. So it's not that surprising, because most people are relatively clueless, which is not a bad thing. I wish I was a little more clueless about my surroundings. But Lee from Tennessee here, Bob, correct me if I'm I thought they moved everyone to the Phoenix office. But Bob, do you think the detectives on the task force are able to work more freely now that they're working out of the Tucson FBI building? I thought they were in Phoenix. Do they bring them back down, or is she meaning now that they're out of Tucson, maybe?
No, the what you're thinking is they moved some of the agents back up to Phoenix to that was their home office, but they are working out of the Tucson FBI office. And the short answer to that question is yes, I do. I think they have more freedom. I think they have more, you know, organic options is the word I like to use to just investigate how it should be investigated without kind of the tight gripped oversight of what might be going on within the sheriff's department. And I think that's a good thing. Let the investigators investigate. That's what they're good at. That's what they get paid to do. And sometimes you just have to let them run with it, regardless of what you're feeling as a commander inside saying, this needs to happen now. It needs to happen when it happens. You just can't force things sometimes. And when you do, that's when you'll start seeing mistakes happen.
Yeah. Phil Ramos, you just heard Bob Krieger saying you can't force it, but, don't you think they find her, you find a perp. Isn't it time for grid searching? When do you do a grid search? A lot of people have asked about that, including bringing dogs out.
Oh, yeah, that would have been done in the first few days. I mean, in the first couple of hours, that a grid search would have been started and the dogs would have started right away. I think that was one of the criticisms that came up is this special flight device that they have on a plane to use FLIR and infrared to track that down. That should have been done immediately. Because the longer you wait, the colder that trail's going to get. So, that should have been done right away.
And Ramos, have you ever had someone micromanage your case? I don't imagine that you would take that too well.
No. And the inherent problem with that is you've got enough pressure on you and your squad to get this done. Let's start digging up evidence and just talking to bad guys or witnesses. You don't need the staff breathing down your neck, adding to that pressure. That's why you have supervisors. That's why you have lieutenants, captains, and the chiefs to keep that heat off of you so that you can do your investigation effectively. Because if you got people, breathing down your neck everywhere you turn, it's going to diminish your ability to do a competent investigation. And you can't have that in a case like this.
Yeah. I can't believe suspects have not turned on each other. This is from Jill Kay by now, or that no one has turned on them. What does that say about the suspects, Jen Coffendoffer? It's a bit of a profiling question. And then this next question got me a chuckle, but they've asked a few times, so we'll come to it. But Jen, are you surprised that, especially with $1.2 million on the line, that no one has turned on anybody?
Well, there is some honor amongst kidnappers, apparently, because I'll tell you what, it is very interesting. When you look at the loyalty at some individuals who commit crimes, I think in part out of fear, in other words, close girlfriends and things along that line. Also, I think in this case, it's possible that people don't know that he did that are close to him. I think that is very possible. And then others might think, loose associates might think, could that be him? Nah, it isn't him, right? In your mind, you never want to think that somebody could actually do that. So I've just found that in the criminal element, something like this, organized like this, that I think it's possible they could be loyal if more than one is involved, which I have always said, I think there's at least two.
Yeah. And COE, again, I would love to play that Kurt Dabb piece from last night. Jan Baker here, back to Phil, and then we'll come to Bob after we watch some of this Board of Supervisors clips. But Phil, how often are cases solved because of a pissed off girlfriend or wife of the criminal? Phil, does this happen?
It happens a lot, man. I tell you, it happens a lot. And it happens to the point where, okay, is this information good or is this just an evil person trying to get somebody in trouble? We have to sort through that. You have to look at the information, look what their motive is for telling you and coming forward, and make sure you corroborate absolutely everything that they say, because that it could come back to bite you if you don't do it properly. But yeah, it happens quite often.
Wow. And I was just telling Bob how much fun it is to do a podcast with your wife. I was suggesting it to him off air. I started watching the Don Adelson trial, then became an SCS member, and it's been nonstop since mid-December. Reiner, Tepe murders, now the Nancy Guthrie abduction. STS is the best. Thank you to Denise. Please, on that note, hit the like and subscribe button. You have no idea how much that helps us. We've also got an active Patreon page. I could not do this at all. Honestly, if the COE disappeared tomorrow, which no one wishes or wants, number one, I couldn't raise my kids. Number two, I could never, podcast would immediately end. I could not do this without her by my side. Steve Cohen, Space Coast, the mods. It is a truly, it truly is a team effort. COE, on that note, I think you have to play. This is now our best guest and a good friend of Bob Krieger and a current sergeant within the Pima County Sheriff's Department. He's still active. Sergeant Aaron Cross at the Board of Supervisors meeting from last night. COE, can we roll it?
Good morning, Board. I'm Sergeant Aaron Cross, president of the Pima County Deputies Organization. As many know, a reporter recently uncovered the long-hidden, terrible record of Sheriff Chris Nanos from his time as an El Paso police officer. This includes purportedly beating a handcuffed suspect in the head with a flashlight, for which he was suspended and nearly indicted. This record, if properly disclosed, would have likely prevented him from being hired or from becoming a peace officer in the state of Arizona. For over 40 years, this has been concealed from the department and the voters of Pima County. Because of this scandal, our organization, the largest union of deputies in Pima County, has taken a vote. We asked our members a clear question: confidence in Sheriff Nanos to continue in office or no confidence, and a call for his resignation. The verdict was unanimous: no confidence. He has lost the faith of his deputies and the community. His past renders him unfit to wear the badge.
I've spoken to you several times over the years about Sheriff Nanos. His horrific stewardship continues. I left 4 years ago. I don't even recognize the department. The people left. You have rookies training rookies. You continue to build houses and apartments in the county. They continue to lose bodies at the department. It's going to increase calls for service and inadequate coverage for our citizens.
Sheriff Nanos is currently in the process of being recalled. As a person helping to collect signatures, the mere mention of his name gets the clipboard snatched out of my hands, followed by, "Give me that. This guy has got to go." Most petition signers only know of Sheriff Nanos from the embarrassing reports on national news excoriating him nightly for a pattern of amateurish missteps in the gruesome disappearance of Pima County resident Nancy Guthrie. This does not bode well for the leading law enforcement officer in Pima County or the people who gave him that job.
So, Bob Krieger, that is a scathing rebuke right there. I mean, first of all, let's just give Aaron Cross some credit. I mean, he is an active sergeant. It cannot be easy to get up there and say that publicly because, I don't know, he can take heat. Your thoughts about him having the courage to get up there and do that?
Well, when Aaron put together the Deputies Association a few years ago, he knew this was going to happen. That was what comes with the territory. It's unfortunate that the culture within the Sheriff's Department is if you don't support, you're going to be pushed out. Your assignment's going to change. You know where Aaron's assigned to now. He's taking phone calls. He's not allowed to wear a uniform and go out and do what he's really, really good at. And that's, you know, they made this assignment up for him. They literally.
I did not know that. So he has to be in like plain clothes.
He's the most senior sergeant within the sheriff's department, either first or second. He loves being a sergeant and he's a great street cop and a great supervisor. When he placed his support behind Heather Lappin in the last election, like a lot of us did, after he was suspended, put on admin leave for a few months, that turned out to be absolutely nothing. He was then reassigned to the telephone reporting center, which is he gets to sit and take phone calls all day about people losing their garden hose because the calls that go there don't require a deputy response. That job was typically maintained by deputies who were injured. They would sit there and they wouldn't have to burn sick time because they blew out their knee and they could sit there and take phone calls. The sheriff saw it was fitting to put a sergeant who's probably making $100,000 a year in that position and not utilize his assets that are really good supervisory in the field, in the moment, cop type stuff. So, yeah, anyone who says that's not a punishment, they're wrong. And everyone knows it. It's like I said, no one's ever been assigned there full time before. Now we put a sergeant there. So Aaron knew that going in, and he's taken on that role. You saw how composed he was in that message today, how unemotional he was. He's just simply stating facts. The facts are that unanimously within the union that voted, no one, it's not just a few people, no one who voted has confidence in the sheriff to do the job effectively anymore. Based not only on what's going on with the Nancy Guthrie thing, but years and years of things like what have happened to Aaron, what have happened to other officers based on assignment, pushed out, the tearing down of the homicide unit, of our search and rescue unit, of our SWAT team, putting people who are literally really, really good at what they do, just pushing them away for whatever those reasons might be.
Yeah. COE, just a reminder, if we can get, by the way, I was just panicked. I checked my phone to make sure the COE is not sending me a scathing text. But she, you know, this is not politics in the sense of, right here. This is part of what is going on right now. I mean, this is the news. So, but COE, I'd love to play that, Kurt Dabb sound because, people are asking, was this, a single person involved? You just heard Jen Coffendoffer say no, and what Kurt Dabb said last night, struck me. But Phil Ramos, and thank you for that, Bob. But Phil Ramos, to you. So you just saw Sergeant Aaron Cross get up at a Board of Supervisors meeting, who is active right now, and you just heard put on some awful desk duty job. And he says, you know, there's this long, terrible record involving Chris Nanos, that according to recent reporting from his past, he was suspended for beating a perp in the head with a flashlight, that would have prohibited him from ever becoming a peace officer in the state of Arizona, and that there's literally a vote of no confidence in him. What do you do here, Phil Ramos? This is a real tug of war internally, and I don't even know how much of a tug it is. It's Chris Nanos basically against everyone.
As the investigators, you ignore it because it's not going to change the evidence. It's not going to change the direction you're going. It's going to be a distraction. And if you can't give 100% of your attention to the case because you're being distracted by administrative political garbage like that, then it's a disservice not only to the family, but to the investigators who are out there busting their butt 24 hours a day trying to get this done. And they're being annoyed, and just leave us out of this, man. Just let us do our job. You guys do the politics. That's why you're politicians. That's why you get paid all that big money. You guys handle the nonsense and leave the police work to the troops on the ground. And leave us alone. Let us do our job. Keep us out of that crap.
Yeah. Bob, is this true? Did Nano switch Sergeant Cross's hours also, which affected his family and child care? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, he worked midnights. His wife is, I believe she's she's in the medical field. So they had a great, he loved working midnights, which is uncommon against most people, but it worked for him and worked for his family. He would be able to go home, tag in, mom would go to work. He'd get to spend time with his kids. And again, being the most senior sergeant out there, like, hey, it was very personal. Comments have been made to me specifically that the Cross brothers, because he also has a brother who's a sergeant with the department years ago, that they'll never get anything. They will do all they can to make their lives hell. It was done specifically to try and get him to retire, I'm sure. And yes. So the short answer is yes, it was done intentionally. It's a Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. It interferes with him being able to take his son and daughter to school and spend time with them. And Aaron has said very publicly that's why he is taking this burden on. He goes, if you want to take time away from my kids, when you make it personal, then we're going to make it personal. And that's where, unfortunately, it is. And like Phil said, this is all unnecessary noise right now during an investigation like this.
I hope I'm invited, even though he barely knows me. But I want to come out to the retirement party. I think it's 2 years. Look at this, everyone. Joel, texts incoming. Wonderful. Can hardly wait to read them. Jennifer Koffendoffer. So there was another police officer who got up, retired Pima County Sheriff's deputy, who got up and said, it's been horrific stewardship, rookies training rookies. And then there's a woman who got up and said, most people just know about this because of what's going on with Nancy Guthrie. But I just want to get your take also. You know, there's a lot of bureaucracy in the federal government, so I'm sure there's plenty of bureaucracy within the FBI. But what about this in the midst of, you know, the most high profile missing person investigation that we've seen in years?
You know, it all started when he went to a basketball game, right in the throes of this investigation. I can guarantee you, Phil and Bob, if this was your case, if you were in charge of this, this is the last thing you would be thinking about doing. And it's just exploded where we have got to see Chris Nanos day after day. Can I ask this question? I want to know, does he ever say the truth? Because I'm the one that's actually sort of backed him, saying, listen, we don't have information from anybody in law enforcement now. All we have is what he says. And then he'll say something, and then the next day he says something different. I kept saying that if he wrote it down, it's probably accurate and the Bureau probably supported it. But now with seeing this, what he wrote today, I have lost all confidence in him just today. This is the day when I'm like, it was all building and I give people all sorts of, you know, leniency. And look at this. I mean, I think he's just, from what I've seen, it's horrible.
Bob Krieger, another go read your text, Cooler by the Lake. They want to know, I mean, just your take, is he purposely undermining, Cooler by the Lake wants to know, is Nanos purposely undermining this investigation in your opinion?
No, of all things, I would never blame him for that. If that were the case, I'm still supposed to, I'd go arrest him. You know, but the incompetence, the ego, the wordsmithing that he does, he's not purposely doing it. To answer Jennifer's question, he's always been like that. He will talk in circles and circles and circles and contradict himself minutes after. He likes to hear himself talk. And this is the path that we go down. We have a PIO. We have other folks who could do a much better job of putting this out there, which everyone in the agency knows. He knows that. But yet he still chose to go out there and do this.
Look, I mean, we're beating up on him today. There's no doubt about that. But I don't think that this guy is purposely going to, torpedo an investigation. I think that at his heart, he is he's a cop, maybe not always a great cop, but I don't think, you know, he would do that. No, but if you're a public official, and things are not going right or well, you deserve to get beat up a little bit. And he's a big man. He can take it, I think. And by the way, Sheriff Chris Nanos, you have an open invite on this show whenever you'd like. Phil Ramos, here's an interview that KVOA did with Chris Nanos. Let's play this. And then I've got to ask you, because he confused the timeline quite a bit. So I'll ask you about that on the backside.
County Sheriff Chris Nanos has given many interviews on the case, but this interview is a bit different. He takes us back to what he remembers about that day when she went missing, shares what's happened since, and has a message for the person or people who took her.
It started with a call.
Take me back to the night of Sunday, January 31st. When did you get the call that Nancy was missing?
My team had notified me of a missing person. Search and Rescue was searching the area.
And we begin tonight with breaking news. The Pima County Sheriff's Department is looking for a missing woman tonight. Good
evening. And there were some concerns with what they were seeing at the scene.
Cumberland Skyline is where we are.
Investigators confirmed the missing woman was Nancy Guthrie, the mother of Savannah Guthrie, a name recognized across the country and deeply rooted in the Tucson community.
I don't even know that I knew it was the Guthrie family until probably closer to 6-7 o'clock that evening.
Ms. Guthrie is the mother of today's show anchor, Savannah Guthrie.
Within hours, the investigation was expanding with the eyes of the nation watching. The
FBI was plugged in that Sunday. Monday morning, we got a quick briefing. They had processed the scene, and we knew we needed some help.
After the public appeal,
we do, in fact, have a crime scene.
Area right outside of Nancy Guthrie's house came press conferences, drawing hundreds of reporters.
We are aware of a ransom letter that was sent to the local media.
A tip hotline was created.
I thank all of you for the prayers for our beloved mom.
Billboards went up in several states, but the decision to clear the crime scene, followed by renewed searches in the weeks after, has drawn criticism.
A major focus all of a sudden on the house again.
Though Sheriff Chris Nanos says he stands by the work of his investigators.
Sheriff, looking back at this past month in the investigation, did it go the way you wanted it to go?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Here's the thing. I think somebody said, well, Sheriff, did you regret this? Look, I have no regrets about my team and their efforts. I don't regret we let the crime scene go too soon or any of that. That's just silly.
It's new FBI recovery.
Then 10 days later, the biggest break in the case, doorbell video released showing a suspect
with what appears to be a gun at Nancy Guthrie's home the night of her disappearance.
Today, it remains one of the key pieces of evidence investigators are still leaning on. But it's not the only evidence detectives are analyzing.
Cell phone data, pings, cameras. I mean, how much are you guys leaning into that information, that evidence?
You know, it could be a cell tower dump, could be analyzing a cell phone.
So there is still digital evidence that you guys are waiting on to research?
Well, we're analyzing all the time, yes.
The sheriff says investigators have gathered a lot of information. They're just not able to share much of it publicly right now.
If you could talk directly to the person who took Nancy, what is your message?
Give her up. Let her go. Just let her go.
Let her go. He says it one more time. Phil Ramos, your thoughts just on the interview. He says no regrets. He has no regrets, and it's gone the way it should have or should be.
Well, he has to say that. He can't say, we made a mistake and we screwed it up and it was my decisions weren't good decisions. He certainly can't go on the record and say stuff like that because it's going to come back and bite you when you go to court, if and when you go to court. So not only are you admitting you did something wrong, but you're putting your lead detectives, the guys, the boots on the ground, you're putting them in a bad situation where they start second guessing what they're doing when they've got the experience to do it, which, you know, let me change horses here for a second. You put your best and most experienced detectives in homicide because that's the worst crime that any agency is going to investigate. You don't want new people coming in there with no experience trying to solve a murder. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, it's basic physics. You just don't do it like that. The problem that I've seen nationwide is your experienced detectives are leaving because of whatever reason. Here in Vegas, we've had that problem. And we've got people coming in the homicide that have never prepared a search warrant or don't know how to do an affidavit for a wiretap. It's you have to have all those tools in your bag before you even start looking at this job. Experience is probably the most important characteristic that you can possess to be a good, competent homicide investigator.
Thank you to Judy Herbert giving us another donation. She is unbelievably generous. And then AR Wyoming following suit, coming to us from Wyoming. So thank you to AR. Phil Ramos, back to you. So there's also a lot of confusion because the sheriff came out and said, we believe something occurred on January 11th. And then after he says it, to Bob's point that he contradicts himself, he says, we believe something happened on that date. Then he walks it back and says, we cannot confirm that the image was from January 11th. Google could not verify that date. We asked for that video and then we retracted that request. However, we're still interested. So it's just very confusing. Apparently, they are interested in January 11th, even though there's no timestamp from any video on January 11th. Is that a CYA move? I wasn't even thinking the way you're thinking, which is how you're always thinking, which is what happens if this gets prosecuted in a courtroom? Does he have to stick with that January 11th date, even if he doesn't know that anything happened on that date?
Well, he's certainly going to have to explain it. You're going to have to say, why did you put all this attention into January 11th? Then all of a sudden you pulled that. That plays right into the defense, because the defense is going to say, so what else did you do that wasn't right, or that you regretted, or that you think was a mistake? It's going to, you're jinxing your case, man. You can't say stuff like that. And for whatever reason he did that, maybe he can articulate it and it won't be such a big thing for the defense to bring forward. But then again, you know, you're going to have some top defense attorneys on this one, and they're going to pick it apart. They're going to pick every single thing apart on this case. Hopefully, if we get to that point, I think they will eventually. I think they will. But yeah. It's you're throwing a lot of bait out there for the defense attorneys to snatch and discredit you, the investigation, and hopefully not the detectives themselves. But you know, that's why they're called sharps. They go after everybody.
Those defense attorneys, whoever they are, they don't even know themselves, are salivating right now at the amount of kind of confusion and the sound bites that have come from Sheriff Chris Nanos. Sharky Sharona gifting 10 memberships. Look how generous the community is. And then Lisa Taskey gifting 5. Thank you very much. Jennifer Koffendoffer, these are direct quotes again from, and I know we are beating up on him. And listen, it's a tough job to run any law enforcement jurisdiction, but if you're going to be sheriff, you got to take the heat, and if you can't, you got to get out of the kitchen. But direct quotes: we do believe something occurred on that date. We cannot confirm that the image was from January 11th. Google cannot verify that date. We asked for that video, and then we retracted that request, but they're apparently interested in the date, even though they can't confirm the date. Is it confusing to you, Jen Koffendoffer?
It is confusing. He actually gave an interview also on, I believe it was March 2nd, and then he also gave a whole statement about this. I don't know if you have it, but it was very interesting because he said, because we don't have time stamps and because we don't have date stamps, that anything else is speculation regarding, you know, what dates are important. But yet, I mean, we know the 11th is important because the neighbors were being asked to pull video from that date. So, you know, I think it's clearly important. You can see the difference in how Porch Guy is dressed. His shoes are different. His shirt is different. Obviously, he doesn't have the holster or the backpack. You can look at the background, and that is different, in my opinion, compared to full moon versus waning crescent that I think was on the 11th. There's so many things, and the fact that he just doesn't shut up just is shocking to me. He needs to just be quiet, have his PIO speak, or just stay out of the limelight. That's what I think. I think he's making a lot of mistakes.
Someone said leadership is solving problems. CM here gifting 5 Surviving the Survivor membership. So thank you for that. Now, this was last night's show. Bob was here, so you're not saying double when I play this. And this is Kurt Dabb, who's a retired Pima County homicide detective. And this is his take about the number of people involved. And then I'll get the expert's take.
See any forced entry prior to, during the act of the guy going up to the door, and even after the crime was committed. There's no disturbances at the front door. We don't know what the back looks like. Mm. That would lead to a reconnoiter and having at least, my assumption is they have to have at least 3, probably more than likely 4 individuals that, you know, are working this. And it makes it easier to do recons when you have more people. You're not out doing it, but you have to be able to trust those individuals. And because, again, the logistics of a crime like this are just crazy.
So you think you... Did I hear you right? You think there's 3 or 4 people involved potentially?
I think it totally would have to be at least 3. So look, let's just say it's a kidnapping, okay? Mm-hmm. And right now we're going on the assumption that it's not a kidnapping for ransom because they didn't get any ransom. The ransom might have just been, you know, a red flag or a red herring, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. So a guy that size going into that house without forcing entry, kidnapping a near non-ambulatory 84-year-old female that weighs 150 pounds. And Bob and I discussed the dummy drag that we have to do for Pima County for Arizona post-certification. You have to drag a 160-pound dummy. You don't have to pick it up and throw it over your shoulder because that's next to near impossible unless you know how to do a fireman's carry. And even so, 154 pounds of dead weight, that's a lot of weight. So there had to be at least two individuals, in my opinion, based on my training experience and what I saw, there had to be at least two individuals there that evening.
To the godfather of true crime, Phil Ramos, your thoughts on that? Could it be three or four people? I mean, do you think it's at least two?
Yeah, yeah. Love Kurt, man. He is spot on. He is a good guy, and he knows what he's talking about. It wasn't just that one guy on the patio. You know, we started off calling him a buffoon just because of the way he was acting. But, you know, there may be a little bit more to this guy. But he definitely was not alone. There's no way he could have pulled this off by himself.
How about you, Jen? Have you given thought to the amount or number of people potentially involved in this? And do you think it goes as high as three or four?
It's possible, but I do not believe he did this alone. I concur. I don't even believe the car was out front. I think a lot of people think that. I don't think that. I don't think that they would have kept that car out front for 40 plus minutes. I think he had a walkie-talkie. I've showed that picture many times where he has a handheld antenna coming out of his pocket. I don't think that's a jammer at all. A jammer doesn't shut down Wi-Fi. It interrupts different signals and just causes those signals to make kind of blurry, messed up pictures. And it would have also affected the pacemaker because they're on the same frequency. Bluetooth and Wi-Fi are the same frequency. I am very convinced that a call was made for the person to come around. I think that porch guy's job was to take off that camera and disable that. Obviously, they didn't make entry through there. He goes up and he knocks and he's turning the knob at the same time. Remember, a locksmith went to the back of the house. And we also have a 212 timestamp from one of the cameras, from Nancy's cameras. So 147, he's lollygagging around, disables that camera. Then perhaps he or somebody else walks around and goes in. And by 228, they're gone. But yes, I agree. Definitely more than one, at least two, and there could have been three or four.
Jennifer breaking it down well here. Bob Krieger, I think I asked you this last night, but I'll ask it again. Just a couple more things, then we'll get final thoughts. But do you think that the possibility remains that whoever this person or people are, that they're more sophisticated than they're being given credit for?
Yes. For all the reasons that Jennifer said, I said the first day that video was released, I'm like, this dude's an idiot. But clearly we're 50 days into this and they did enough. They're either the luckiest idiot in the world or they had some planning that went into this. And to keep a streak of luck alive this long is not not normal. So I do think there's a little more sophistication. Things that we as law enforcement would have done on the panel, like that camera would have been gone in a heartbeat. At least a rock would have broken it. You know, they've just thinking a little bit differently, but to not leave DNA behind I agree. I think it was a walkie talkie. I don't think it was a jammer for all the same reasons. That neighborhood, a car is going to stick out like a sore thumb idling in a driveway, but a car just kind of rolls up. It's 2 a.m. No one pays too much attention. You're in and you're out. There's a lot of things that are making it look more sophisticated now, but multiple people and probably more sophisticated than I think we all gave them credit for early on.
Yeah. And Bob, let me come back to you. Cause I think it's Rick Castigar, who's retired assistant chief. Correct me if I'm wrong there, of the Pima County Sheriff's Department. He's speaking with the media. He said that there is noise out there. This is going to be controversial, but this is him, not us, that she could be likely somewhere in Mexico, could be cartel related. Obviously, there's a lot of cartel activity across the border there, cross border abduction. There been no confirmation of any of this, no confirmed cartel links, but I don't know. Had there been rumblings within Pima County that, you know, she was taken to Mexico, never to be seen again. And he's got to be saying that for a reason, I would imagine.
It's always possible. The one thing I would say, if it were cartel related, they are definitely usually typically more sophisticated for something like this. And then the guys would be back in Mexico and it would make absolute sense why we would never hear from them again. And they know the consequences for speaking up. That also plays into why they might not be talking to one another. But at this, and in the cartel world, $1 million is a drop in the bucket. So the money isn't an issue. There's a lot of things on both sides that make you think that it could be related. But at the exact same time, the cartels don't want heat that they unnecessarily need. They're in their job to make money. They're not in to take someone away and just kind of disappear with Savannah Guthrie's mom for whatever the reason might be. Is it possible? Yes. Do we have
dog friendly? Keep barking. Yeah. Go ahead.
Do we have cartel issues all the time in Tucson? Yes, we have my entire career, and it's never going to stop because of the way you can get in and out over the border, both legally and illegally. So all of those things are a possibility. There's justification on each side as to why it could be or why it might not be.
Hmm. A couple of people are asking Jen Coffendoffer, so I'll just put it out there. Ashley Banfield, of News Nation, she now has a podcast, has been reporting that apparently Nancy Guthrie was known to never lock her doors. I'm wondering if you've heard this, your thoughts. I think a lot of, there are a lot of people who feel safe under the illusion that they're safe who don't lock their doors, and that's kind of a sleepy part of Tucson. Your reaction?
Look, she bought that house in 1975, I believe, for $89,000. She's been in that house forever, raised her children there. I think she felt safe there. I think we could go around the board and I can tell you my family, they don't lock any of their doors ever. Now, they have gigantic big farm dogs. I'm a farm girl. But I tell you what, so many people don't lock their doors and don't secure their property. So I wouldn't doubt that could be true. And even if it wasn't, remember a locksmith went there. So my point is it because there was forced entry that the locksmith went there, or did they reinforce it with perhaps a deadbolt and it was just, a lock like this that my panel members, I promise you, can get in that in about 30 seconds without even any tool. So I think the entry was made from the back. I know that source reporting and maybe it's accurate. It could be.
Mm. Phil Ramos, any thoughts? I mean, the biggest question remains why the three little letter word. Any thoughts on a motive here? I mean, it doesn't seem like money is of interest because there's $1.2 million sitting on the table. What would prompt someone to take an 84-year-old woman?
And that's such a good question. Bob was spot on with the cartel. I mean, $1 million is nothing to them. And motive is key right now because, if I remember right, the sheriff has alluded to the fact that they're 90% sure what the motive is. It's only going to leave a few other things. It's not financial. I don't think anybody thinks that it was a financial motive, or else all of this TMZ nonsense would have played itself out. But that's going to be an interesting thing, man. It may very well go back to some story that Savannah did. Who knows? I'm not saying that's the case. It's just without knowing what the sheriff knows or what the cops know as far as the motive goes, it's just all speculation on our part. And you just can't keep guessing and trying to think of what it could be, because it could be a lot of different things. It sure could be a lot of different things. And it's going to be pretty serious, obviously, because look where we're at.
Krieger, is it more dangerous today? I mean, when I was a kid and when you were a kid, I think we were just roaming around the streets, riding our bicycles. I remember not really having, my parents weren't big rule setters. I don't think I had a curfew. I remember Friday nights, go walking around good old Highland Park, New Jersey, one square mile town. Have things gotten more dangerous? I mean, I get nervous when my kids are in the front yard, like kicking a soccer ball around.
I'll say this. No, But what has happened is you have immediate access to every bad thing in the world that happens. You know, the things that are happening now in law enforcement were happening when we were kids, because I was the same way in Hammond, Indiana, the future home of the Chicago Bears.
Yeah.
And, you know, from school shootings to you name it, these things were taking place. You just didn't know about it. When we were growing up, Joel, you didn't know if the White Sox won, if they played after 10 o'clock on the West Coast because of late scores that didn't make the newspaper. So is it any more dangerous? I don't think so. Is our generation definitely more aware of it probably than our parents were, more keeping an eye on us? Yeah, that's true. That's happening. It's just the reality of where we are now. And I don't think it's a bad thing, because should we have been walking around as much as we were? Maybe not at 9, 10 years old, but we won't go down that road right now. It's the same crimes. You can historically go back over crime records and you're going to see almost the exact same things for population, almost from the inception of time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I think I tend to agree. And we had an expert on who said, look, the difference between today and the 1980s or 70s or 90s, pick your decade, is now the child predators are literally in your kid's bedroom, meaning they're online luring them. Whereas, you know, they used to try to, you know, drive the white van down the road, which still happens. The creepy white van, as my kids call it. I plan my days around STS, says Samuki, the most riveting true crime podcast. And thank you for that. And then look at this. Hey, I'm from Highland Park, New Jersey. Jana Jacob, I bet you I'm there from there before you're from there, but I'm curious. Email me, survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. That is my hometown. I am actually supposed to speak at the high school there with my mom at the end of April. So I'm excited. Full circle moment for all of us. Bob Krieger, I'll go around and get some final thoughts. I don't know if I ever shared this with you, Bob Krieger, but I went to Brandeis University in Waltham, Mass. And good old Larry Bird used to practice in our gym when I was in college. And I wasn't a jock. I was a wannabe jock. And I used to hang out with all the baseball players. And those guys used to drink beer with Larry Bird, who could, I don't know, throw away like 30 beers in a sitting. And then they would go to his house at 3 a.m. and steal his garbage. This was pre-eBay days, but they would steal his toothpaste and his sneakers. And I bet you as a kid from Indiana, that is something that you would have done as well. So is this true, Bob? Would you have stolen Larry Bird's garbage? And your final thoughts here?
Probably not Larry Bird. He's down south in French Lick. I'm the Northwest region kind of guy. I'm the Michael Jordan guy. Yeah. Just blocks from the Chicago border. So there's that built-in rivalry.
Yeah.
Plus Indiana State versus Purdue. All of the things. But I could definitely raid Mike MJ's garbage back in the day if I had to.
How does this get solved, Bob Krieger? By the way, before you answer that, Sayreville, New Jersey, home of John Bon Jovi. And I've said this before on the show. Carm used to get her hair done, my mom, by John Bon Jovi's father. So, John, if you're listening, and I know you listen to this, hit me up, survivingthesurvivor@gmail.com. Let me know if your dad's still around and how's he doing. But Bob Krieger, does this get solved with DNA? How do we figure this out?
It's going to be a combination of everything. It might be dumb luck. It's going to be a tip that leads to DNA, that leads to the investigators building a great case. It's going to happen. I've said it before. It might not be in the near future. It might be tomorrow. It's just the guys and gals working hard, following their leads and doing what they need to do and getting rid of all the unnecessary white noise that folks like us talk about and the sheriff talks about.
Lauren Sim, I'm from Indy. Are you from Bob's Indy? Are you from Larry's Indy? Let us know. Jen Coffendoffer, she is a retired FBI special agent and all-around great person, as my daughters would call her. She is a baddie. She teaches self-defense, and I talked to Jen. We're going to try to do something with STS on a women's self-defense course. Krieger and Ramos will do the men's side, and that will involve weapons and firearms. But this is women's self-defense. We'll get Coffendoffer to put together something with STS. Jen, your final thoughts here. I mean, I'm bummed out about this billboard. If the idea gets shot down, are you going to still try to make it happen? I know you're tenacious, and your final thoughts here.
Well, I'm definitely tenacious about this. I just think, as the panel thinks, we got to get the face of what we have of Porch Guy out there. It needs to be out there. It needs to be on billboards. It needs to be on flyers. So I'm pretty committed to doing this. I'm not going to get charged with fraud for putting up billboards and paying for them. So I'm not really too worried about Nanos's threat. As far as my final thoughts, I wanted to ask you all if you knew about this, and I think this could be important. Scottsdale, Arizona, January 31st, two kids who didn't know each other, 16 and a 17-year-old, somehow come together. They are driven to do a crime by a guy named Eight and a guy named Red on Signal. They go drive 6.5 hours from California. They go to Scottsdale, again, 1.5 hours north of Nancy Guthrie's house. They break in. They have $1,000 seed money that they've been given from these people, whoever Red and Eight are, to break in and to demand Bitcoin from very well-off people. They go in literally the day before and beat these people up, constrain them. Long story short, they get the police called on them. They end up in a chase. They're now sitting in jail, these two. Just very interesting from a statistical, you look at the chance of a kidnapping occurring 1.5 hours away the day before, and the driving force behind it, at least as far as I know, still has not been determined in terms of who Red and who Eight were, who gave the $1,000, who did the background on the people that they ended up hitting. It's just a case that really is sticking out to me. So my final thought is I really believe the Bureau is at least looking into that and making sure there's no connection there.
Well, Jen, I've seen you tweet about that and or X about that, and it is – there are eerie similarities. Phil Ramos, again, two young kids under the guys, I guess, getting paid crypto, going and committing this crime that's very similar. You just heard her lay it out. Your thoughts on that? Oh, you're muted, Phil.
That's it, man. It's like a carbon copy of what happened here, down to the crypto. And I absolutely would hope that the FBI is looking into that. I mean, that's just way too many circumstances to be ignored.
It's Phoenix, right? I mean, so Bob Krieger, your thoughts? I mean, I think you've heard this before, right?
Yeah, I have heard of it. I was familiar with it. I do think it could be connected. My gut says no. Just knowing how Single works and what some of the youngsters, especially in our area, do, that we've caught, and we've caught them kidnapping illegals crossing the border. They'll get coordinates. They'll go pick people up, then they'll hold on to them until they get paid. It's just how these folks work in the on the criminal side of it, and they're utilizing these kids. I think the Porch Guy, the Nest Cam guy, is a little bit older, definitely more sophisticated than those two kids were, but that doesn't mean it's not related. And it's too similar and it's too close to not look into it.
So, I mean, Jen, just circling back on that, have you reached out to your former colleagues? Do you know if they are invested? I know they keep, you know, a tight lid on all this, but how you have to, I assume, Jen, correct me if I'm wrong, that you'd have to investigate this to the point where you can completely rule it out, correct?
You have to. You have to find out who was behind that, who was ordering that, who did the recon of the rich people in that neighborhood, where did the money go, where did the money come from, all of that, you know, the seed money, the $1,000 seed money. How did these two individuals that never knew each other, that came from two different areas, come to know each other? What is this on the dark web that they were sought out? There's so many questions in this case, and it's just the statistical probabilities of an unknown kidnapper being involved with a crypto type kidnapping again is just way off the charts. And again, they don't even have a category for this type of a kidnapping that they even track in crime statistics in this area. So they just need to take a look at it.
Yeah, and this is go ahead, Phil.
Let me jump in there, because if you don't look at it, what do you think a defense attorney is going to do when you get on the stand?
Yeah. I love that, Phil. Yeah, of course. He's going to say it was these guys. There's so many similarities. Very interesting. Jen, have you made a video on that? I should know, but.
I have about, oh my gosh, the 11th of March, I think, was when I discovered it. And I did a long show on it, probably an hour show, because I was so intrigued by it. I've done several tweets on it. All the Newsweek and most of the magazines have picked it up. Last night I was supposed to be on Cuomo about it, but we just ran short on time. I mean, it's something that needs to be looked at. And I tell you, this guy is still out here, and whoever else he might have been working with. It's not a safe situation right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, someone said, Phil Ramos, get to Tucson immediately, and then you've got this. Bob might need to come out of retirement and team up with Aaron Cross. How cool would it be if the best guests all headed to Tucson? I smell a reality show, and they solve the Nancy Guthrie case. Best guests in Tucson. Phil Ramos is the now anointed godfather of true crime. I just like saying that. So, Phil Ramos, how the hell does this end up getting solved? Your final thoughts, please. Leave some hope on the table. You get the final word.
There's always hope, man. There's always hope. There's no doubt it's going to get solved because there's just too much police involvement in it. It's going to get solved. Is she coming home? No, I'm sorry, she's not. But hopefully the people that have caused that situation will end up in front of a jury. And it's just going to take a little bit of time, man. We've all had these cases that have taken 6, 8 months to a year, and you finally get some resolution. And it's going to be where you least expect it from. You're going to get a phone call. You're going to get a tip. You're going to get something that you're going to hit your head and say, God dang it, I should have seen that before. And it'll fall into place.
There you go. The Godfather giving everyone reason to hope. Love you, America. Love you, Tucson. Love you, Vegas. Love you, Florida. Love you, Tucson again. We got to bring Nancy home tomorrow. People wrote in. We're going to pivot and we're going to look into the Caleb Flynn case. If you don't know, he was just charged today with aggravated murder. He's a former American Idol contestant, now accused yet another of murdering his wife. And bail set at $3.5 million. And her family is saying, please look at money. Look at the insurance. What was going on there? This guy needed the money. Why? I don't know why this keeps happening, but we're going to take a look at the Caleb Flynn American Idol case tomorrow night on Surviving Survivor. Copper Horse, one of our amazing mods from New Jersey, 1-800-CALL-FBI. That's 1-800-225-5324. Huge thanks to Lieutenant SWAT Commander Bob Krieger, retired FBI agent Jen Koffendoffer, and the godfather of true crime, retired homicide detective Phil Ramos. Guess, stick around 1 second. See you on the flip side here.